We've been talking this year about voluntary simplicity, the rejection of consumerist, materialist values in favor of choosing less and slower and minimal. We've talked about getting rid of stuff, buying fewer things, being responsible with finances, spending less time on our screens, computers, TV, and phones. We've talked a lot about what we want less of in our lives. As our year of study on this topic comes almost to a close, one more sermon in June, it's time to think about what we want more of. What's missing from our lives? You know, don't you, that if you clean out your closet, you will eventually find that you have filled it back up. If we're going to clean out our life closets, if we're going to let go of mindless spending and consuming, let go of wasted time, spent overstimulating ourselves with unnecessary news and non-restorative distractions, if we're going to clean out these closets, then we need to be intentional about what we add back in. This morning, I'm making the case for more leisure in your life. Leisure, time that is free from obligations, work, paid and unpaid, and tasks required for existing, sleeping, eating, those things we do to take care of ourselves. How much time do you have each day free from obligations, work, and the things you do to take care of yourself? An hour or two? Even that? The importance of leisure, this time free from obligations and work, is affirmed by all religious traditions. And yet most of us have trouble finding time to rest and relax. I know many of our congregants who are retired find that your time is just as full as it has always been. And the idea of finding time to sit around and do nothing can feel impossible. So I have good news and bad news about that, and it's the same news. Time studies show that we have more free time than we think. So that's good news, of course, because it suggests we can enjoy leisure time. And it's bad news because, well, if we have more leisure time than we think, where is it? Why is it so hard to find? John Robinson is a sociologist who studies time. Looking at time diary studies, he finds that we all, worldwide, have more leisure time than we have ever had before. A concrete example of this was recently described in a May 13th New York Times opinion piece by author Laura Vanderkam. The article is called "The Busy Person's Lies." Over the past 12 months, she has logged her time on an Excel spreadsheet in order to keep track of what she's doing. She has four children under the age of 8. One of them was a newborn. She had recently published a book and makes a significant portion of her living as a speaker, so she travels for work, and so does her husband. So in other words, this was, as she described it, possibly the busiest year of her life that she was tracking. She writes, "So I logged on a spreadsheet in half-hour blocks every one of the 8,784 hours that make up a leap year. I didn't discover a way to add an extra hour to every day, but I did learn that the stories I tell myself about where my time goes isn't always true. The hour-by-hour rhythm of my life was not quite as hectic as I had thought." Laura Vanderkam writes about time management, and this was not her first time analyzing a time log. She reports that professionals tend to overestimate work hours. "We remember our busiest weeks as typical. This is partly because negative experiences stand out in the mind more than positive ones, and partly because we like to see ourselves as hardworking. One study, this is still, I'm quoting her, one study from the June 2011 Monthly Labor Review found that people estimating 75 plus hour work weeks were off on average by about 25 hours. She once had a young man tell her he was working 180 hours a week. Impossible, considering the fact that this is 12 more hours than a week contains. But he felt tired and overworked, as we all sometimes do, and so he chose a high number to quantify that feeling. We remember our busiest weeks as typical. What she learned through analyzing her own time was that, to her surprise, she worked an average of 40 hours a week. She slept almost 7.5 hours a day, this while being up in the middle of the night for feedings of her newborn baby. She made up for lost time by napping during the day. And she had much more free time than she would have described of herself if she didn't have a time log showing her how she actually spends her time. So as someone who writes about time management, she encourages people who feel overwhelmed to keep a time diary. I talked about this a little bit last month. Now there's nifty apps you can get that just, you know, keep on your phone and will track your time for you if you log on. Journalist Bridget Schultz is the author of the book Overwhelmed: Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. She suggests that part of our overwhelm comes because our time is so fragmented. Switching between checking email, making dinner, watching TV, and finishing that report is more mentally draining than doing one at a time. Working on anything for long stretches of uninterrupted time feels very different than work that is full of starts and stops. And more than in any other time of history, many of us start and stop all day long. We stop to check email, to check the news, to check Facebook. That fragmented time contributes to our sense that there's not enough time. From our reading, I thought a silent retreat would teach me about silence, but what I really learned about was time. The only difference between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. was the sun in the sky and the quality of light. After ending a 5-day silent retreat in 2014, and then again in 2015, this year I'm leading such a retreat this July in Santa Barbara. I've found the silence and the inner stillness that comes from such a retreat to be seductive. I find there are times now that I need to sit and do absolutely nothing. I don't read or watch TV or journal. I just stare at the wall or the ceiling and consider if I'm cold. Do I need a blanket? Or am I too warm? And do I need to take my socks off? Having had a taste of what it feels like to really do nothing, there are times I now yearn for that sense of leisure, the spaciousness of it. Like most of us, when I try to do nothing, it's not unusual for the to-do list to pop into my head, what the Buddhists call monkey mind, the jumping from thought to thought. That's what happens to most of us when we try to relax, when we're overwhelmed, when we try to be still and silent. Free from obligations and work, it can still be a challenge for us to stop thinking about our obligations and our work. And that's okay, really. Yes, it's wonderful if we can slow down our racing minds. Prayer, meditation, and journaling are all practices that can help with that. One of you reminded me just this week how helpful it is sometimes to just make a list, get it written down. But I think there's still a benefit to sitting and doing nothing, even if our mind continues to jump around. When my mind is jumping around, it doesn't help me to try and fight it. Instead, I just try to notice it. Oh, look, my monkey mind. How about that? This kind of self-observation is also a meditative practice. So some of you have talked to me about attending this silent retreat in July, and I hear curiosity, but I also hear fear. Because sitting quietly can unleash everything we're trying so hard not to think about. All our fears, all our worries. It can be so hard to be still and let those feelings come. And I think, this is opinion, I think it's mostly because of habit. The difference between relaxation and boredom is how stimulated we feel, how attentive we are. So sitting on the couch and staring at the wall can be relaxing if you're in that right frame of mind. But if it's been your habit to keep yourself constantly doing and doing and doing, sitting on the couch doing nothing can be a struggle, can be boring. So part of our work, if we want more leisure time, is to build better habits, to build that muscle. We have to find a new and slower pace. Needs to be okay to turn off our devices, even to set down a book or a newspaper and just be. That's what silent retreats have done for me, helped me build new habits, new ways of being. It's like hitting a reset button. Who are we if we aren't talking? Who are we if we aren't buying things? Who are we if we aren't racing from one task to the next? When we embrace voluntary simplicity, we are invited to find out. So the invitation this morning is to be mindful of your time. Become your own researcher. How do you use your time? How can you cultivate more time to work uninterrupted rather than working with lots of stops and starts? Can you recognize the time that you already have for leisure, time to slow down, time to find a different pace and start to build the habit of leisure, the habit of free time? Life is not a race, and leisure is not a sin. Let's all take more time to stop and smell the roses.